Live from CAP Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. 246%. That's the volume of California's snowpack water equivalent when compared to the historical average for this time of year. It is one of the largest snowpacks ever recorded statewide, rivaling levels not seen in 40 years since 1983. But when you break up the Sierra Nevada into regions, the southern portion is the most impressive. According to the Department of Water Resources, the southern Sierra is more than 300% of its historical average, setting an all-time record. And that is creating a slow-moving crisis across the San Joaquin Valley. We've had conversations on Insight already about the reemergence of Tulare Lake, a typically dry lake bed that was once the largest body of fresh water west of the Mississippi, at least four times the size of Lake Tahoe. The lake became virtually non-existent due to dams, canals, and levees to make way for the Central Valley's growing agriculture industry. And when Tulare Lake reappears in extremely wet years like this one, that comes at a huge cost to agriculture, the economy, and the people who call the Tulare Basin home. That area is located roughly between Fresno and Bakersfield, and it's home to millions of Californians already reeling from the impacts of flooding from the series of atmospheric rivers earlier this year. A natural disaster only expected to get worse as that snowpack melts across the valley. The impacts are widespread, and it's a top priority for the state. Joining us to learn more about the response is Brian Ferguson with the California Office of Emergency Services, or OES. Good morning, Brian.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
So the last time OES joined us, it was towards the beginning of the year following deadly and damaging winter storms that really only continued into the start of the spring season. So let's start with the statewide hindsight of what the past 4 months have been like.
Well, really, we continue to experience weather whiplash. And even though we're under bluebird skies here in Sacramento today, that snowpack that you mentioned in the mountains does have the possibility of presenting really challenges into the late spring and early summer as the snow melts, comes down the mountain. And so it is a really challenging and evolving disaster that we're going to have to keep a close eye on, not just now, but for the months to come.
When did the state, because you have your own meteorologists and climatologists, when did the state become aware that Tulare Lake would reemerge?
Well, this is something we've been keeping a close eye on, you know, not just in Tulare, but in these historic watersheds all up and down the state. And, you know, looking very closely, not just at the amount of water that's in the system now, but what's going to come later. This is not a new challenge in California. Floods traditionally are actually the most deadly disasters that we have in our state, more so than wildfires or earthquakes, which are more abrupt and, you know, sometimes get more publicity. But, you know, we've had historically more deaths associated with flooding than any other disaster. And as we look at the months to come, it's what are the proactive early steps we can take now while we have an opportunity, because it's not a matter of if, but when this water comes down and really presents challenges for communities across our state.
I mean, when you begin to think about the broad range of impacts from long-term flooding across the southern San Joaquin Valley, the Tulare Basin, you can really go down like a rabbit hole of dangers. And you're talking about being proactive and trying to get ahead of it to mitigate that the flooding that is anticipated to come. So what is the state's most pressing concern when it comes to the impact over the coming weeks and months?
It's really people, not just keeping people safe, but understanding the role that people play in managing this water. Fighting over water rights and who owns it and who moves it is really as old as the state itself. And so we're having conversations right now with all of the local authorities, whether they're law enforcement, agriculture, landowners, because all these folks have a role to play. There's no single entity that can control how we do this. We must work closely together to try to keep as many people safe as possible. And we have that opportunity now. It's not going to be easy, but our leadership has been on the ground with these communities. And we want to make decisions that are in the best interest of the community as a whole. We're not going to raise a levee one place so it floods another area, or choose agriculture at the loss of human life. And so it's really making a series of decisions that may be hard, but ultimately will keep as many people safe as possible as we move forward.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about situations that can get heated among members in the community, and that has happened already this year because this area has already shouldered a brunt of flooding from atmospheric rivers. So how are the communities, where do they stand today across the southern San Joaquin Valley? How are they faring now?
So there is flooding as we speak right now. And it's not just that we're experiencing this flooding, it's that there's a huge amount of water still to come. And so by and large, the conversations we're having are positive. People want to get to a solution that's going to help as many people as possible, but it's not easy. The legal hurdles, the rules, the regulations around this are complex, but our goal is to kind of cut through that red tape with an eye towards what are the steps we can take to be proactive, to get people to safety, and also help the public understand what their risks are so they can take those actions in a way that keeps them safe or their families safe.
You mentioned that there's already flooding that's taking place. What are the areas that are most concerning to you?
Well, certainly the Tulare Basin is something we're looking at. The town of Allensworth has experienced very significant flooding, but it's also further north. We are not out of the woods for the San Joaquin watershed up into Sonoma, and certainly San Bernardino. There is so much snow there that there's almost no recorded history of where that snow melt's going to go. And so Los Angeles County, San Bernardino, Kern County, they're really throughout our state, there's going to continue to be challenges. And so, while we're looking very closely at Tulare and the lake that's reemerging there, we want to keep a broader eye on what's happening all across our state.
Yeah. Last week we had Jeffrey Mount on, and he's with the Public Policy Institute of California and a leading expert when it comes to the state's water infrastructure. And he said that there's really nothing that the state can do to prevent what's going to unfold. And as you just said, it's going to melt in a way that may be unprecedented. It's hard to predict. He called it a slow-moving natural disaster. But what can the state do on the front end to mitigate or lessen what's to come?
Well, what we're talking about right now, all of these steps that we can help educate the people who may be in the way of this disaster, that's something we don't get the opportunity to do during a wildfire or an earthquake. And so we want to take advantage of, we think we have a week or two here to get the word out and also get first responders in place. So if there is flooding, we can make rescues rapidly. We have a federal declaration from President Biden, which allows us to bring in resources. So we're simultaneously helping people recover from the additional flooding while preparing for what's still to come.
You bring up an important point. So is there kind of a silver lining that this is kind of this slow-moving crisis, given that OES responds to many disasters and crises that come with little to no warning?
That's exactly right. Given the choice, we'd always prefer to have an opportunity to get ready. That isn't to say that we're going to be able to mitigate all of this. There is no way to dig ourselves out of this or build a levee that's going to change the flow of the water. But what we can do is get to people and help them understand what they can do so they can stay safe. And if we get through this with a minimal loss of life, that will be success.
Will this severity change depending on how quickly the snow melts?
Yeah, there's a lot of factors we can't control in terms of how much evaporates, how fast the snow melts, what the weather looks like. Just like a wildfire can be driven by Diablo winds, as we've experienced in recent years, the weather is going to play a huge part in this. And we don't control all those factors. And so knowing what we do know, we can take early steps. But there's a lot that's still going to be up to Mother Nature. And really, in the environment we live in with climate change, things are happening quickly and aggressively. And, we're going to react to it in such a way to try to keep as many folks safe as possible.
Yeah, we're talking about an area in the Central Valley which is home to vulnerable communities. I mean, there are barriers from income to language barriers. So what is OES's role in helping residents lessen the economic hardships they're going to face, or they currently are facing, given to flooding that's already existing in the area?
We know that vulnerable Californians are disproportionately impacted by disasters. That could be because you're older, perhaps you're disabled, or you speak a different language. And there's been a lot of investment in recent years from the state to try to mitigate the consequences on these communities. And so we have invested tens of millions of dollars in outreach, so it's culturally, linguistically appropriate. We're putting out messages, not just in English, but Spanish, Hmong, Tagalog, many indigenous languages that are spoken by farm worker communities, and also working with trusted messengers to help them get the word out, agriculture leaders, faith-based leaders, because oftentimes we as the state are not the best spokesperson or person to reach these community members. And so we want to work with people who are trusted in the community so that people know it's safe not to go to work, and it, or perhaps it is safe to go sign up for aid. And there's a lot of aid that may be available. And so we want to get folks the maximum amount of assistance we can, and also do it in a way that doesn't further exacerbate the challenges they face just every day as a vulnerable Californian.
You mentioned Allensworth in terms of flooding, and that was the first town founded by freed slaves in California. But there's surrounding towns as well, like El Paso and Concoran, where they may actually be completely submerged. What happens to the homes and the livelihoods there in terms of long-term assistance and recovery?
Well, the federal declaration that was approved by President Biden does have financial assistance that's available for individuals and homeowners, as well as small businesses. But we know that may not fit for everyone. The state's actually invested in a new rapid response program for undocumented Californians who may not be eligible for traditional federal assistance. Federal policy is a challenge, as you guys document every day on immigration policy. And we know that many of the farm workers, many of the communities here may not be documented or have a formal legal status. And so it's working closely with our state programs to try to provide support. And if state programs aren't quite the right fit, working closely with philanthropy. So working with private sector philanthropic groups to bring in aid to people. So it's really trying to plug that need in any way we can.
There are just so many threats in it. There's just so many layers to this. Another layer is education. And EdSource did a wonderful article and found that many schools in the Southern Central Valley, especially Tulare County, they have some of the highest flood risk in the state. Does OES have a role in helping students, schools, staff, and their families?
Yeah, we work really closely with the State Department of Education, and there are resources available. Planada, which was one of the areas that flooded in the January storms, were actually able to build a temporary school facility for that community. And so that type of funding flows directly from the federal government and is something we're able to act quickly on. It'll ultimately depend on the type of damage that any schools incur, but there is an ability to rapidly try to either move or set up secondary facilities, because we know that schools are important, not just for the education they provide students, but often they're a community gathering place. They're places where people go to get meals. They have a secondary and tertiary impacts that really bring communities together. And so they always are a priority in a disaster to try to get back online as soon as possible.
Another concern are that there's two prisons in the area. When will the state make a decision on whether to evacuate inmates? And if so, if it comes to that, where will they go?
So every prison has a continuity plan, whether it's a power shutoff, a fire. And so they are required by law to have a plan of what happens if they have to evacuate. At this point, we haven't determined that that's necessary, but the folks at the Department of Corrections are working really closely to understand what are the steps they could take early. Perhaps they could move medically vulnerable individuals who may take longer amount of time. And we also have the benefit of we're closing prisons in the state of California. So we have more room than we had a couple years ago. If we would have had this same challenge several years ago when we were at 170% capacity, there'd be no place to go. And so there's a lot of preemptive work that's happening now to plan for if there were to need to be an evacuation, but we're not quite there yet. Our goal is still to prevent that because it's the safest thing, not just for the prisoners, but for those who work there, who are in and around the community, and most of the staff live in this community as well. And so if we relocate the prisoners, we're putting the staff in a challenging place. So really trying to work to understand what the impacts are and try to avoid that, if at all possible, having to move our prisoners.
There's also concern about public health. For example, the Tulare Lake Compost Facility that's located in Kings County is in an area where there's flooding that's taking place, but that's also where Los Angeles County stores its sewage, essentially. So what is being done to prevent potentially toxic materials from contaminating the land and becoming an environmental hazard?
Yeah, this is one of the biggest concerns we have. And so we're working closely with the county and with their state environmental protection agency to actually map where are all of the critical infrastructure sites, whether it's a water treatment plant. There's a lot of oil derricks in the southern part of the San Joaquin Valley. So what happens if those get flooded? Fertilizer plants. And so we can map early, and maybe there's protective measures that could be taken there. And then state environmental law is going to be in place for a long time to test the water, to try to keep as many folks safe as possible. The positive thing that we have is that this is not the first time this has happened. It's not unknown that this is an area that floods. And so there are certain requirements that are put in place early, but it's certainly something that's going to we're going to have to keep an eye on, not just in Tulare, but in any other parts of our state that perhaps could be flooded in the weeks and months to come.
Given that this has happened before and to this magnitude, I believe it rivals 1983, which is four decades ago. It took years to recover for that area, for that region. So what does long-term recovery, what will it look like this time around?
Yeah, so certainly, again, the federal declaration gives tools around this, but we're trying to reap the benefits that we can't. There's so much subsidence in the soil there that we're actually trying to leverage this to recharge the groundwater in some ways. And so, you know, while those who chose to make a livelihood in this area, you know, could be at risk for their area being underwater, not just for weeks, but maybe months or even years, there's a lot of work that's underway to try to provide assistance to them and open up as much avenues as possible. But we do have historical challenges. As our climate changes, the floodplains are very similar to people who live in the wildland-urban interface during fire season. And so there are unique risks depending on where you live in the state. And so trying to help people understand the risks that they live, have appropriate insurance if that's possible, and then provide secondary avenues, whether it's small business assistance through the federal government or relocation assistance, if to the extent that may be possible.
Finally, I mean, it's not that it's just the Central Valley or the Southern San Joaquin Valley. This region impacts the country and even the world. It's an agricultural mecca. So what impact will this have on the country and even parts of globally?
I think it's important, as you bring up, that people understand that this is not just something that impacts a part of our state. This is something that's actually going to end up on the kitchen table, on the grocery bill of all Californians and maybe even people all across the country. And so that's why we are trying to be laser focused on preventing as much as we can and keeping people safe. But this has very far-reaching impacts, not just for today, but for the months and years to come.
Brian, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Brian Ferguson is the Deputy Director for the California Office of Emergency Services, OES, discussing how the state is responding to the Tulare Basin in the Central Valley, which is expected to receive levels of flooding over the coming weeks and months not seen in decades due to one of the largest snowpacks on record in the Sierra. You're listening to Insight on your NPR station, CAP Radio. I'm Vicki Gonzalez.